J.J. Johnson and his quintet with Bags Groove. That's him on trombone. We also hear from Nat Adderley on cornet, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Wilbur Little on bass, and Albert Heath, one of the famous Heath brothers, on drums. This, by the way, was recorded in 1958, and I really love it. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're back at it after a little respite. And I hope that you were able to catch up on your Z's and take it easy. I had the extraordinary opportunity of rest. I rested. I didn't know how to rest. And of course, it started off well, and then I got fed up of resting, and I had to move around a little bit. But that's my idiosyncrasy that's doing that. Okay, so today I want to talk about a very interesting story that has come up over the past couple of days. I've seen it. And the story is located, I should say, the location of the story is the Virginia Theological Seminary in Alexandria, Virginia. The story was that very quietly, beginning in February of this year, the seminary began paying out to descendants of enslaved people and people who were, for all intents and purposes, also enslaved, but were working for free on the building of the seminary and its compound. They started paying very quietly amounts of money, essentially to cover what they thought would have been a fair exchange. This is the seminary's point of view. A fair wage. Nobody earned wages back then when the seminary was built. And it sort of slipped out, and the story appeared. But it appeared with the understanding that anybody reading it should say, well, isn't this nice? Isn't this a nice thing to do? All these years after these people were brought in as slaves, and as slaves, they didn't get paid either. And the seminary, out of the goodness of its heart, decided to try and make things right. And they started to pay the descendants of these people, insofar as they could track them down, the money that was owed for the free labor that they got in the course of building this elaborate compound. Well, of course, they're still considered laborers. They have no skills as such. They just built this extraordinary these buildings, I don't know what, inspired by God or just a rare shot of genius or something, or they were following the instructions of their white supervisors and owners. And so they constructed the Virginia Theological Seminary in Northern Virginia. That's quite a while ago. They've died off. But the story endures. The story is that the seminary, because it wanted to do the right thing, because after all, it's a Christian institution, did not want to cheat anybody. So they amassed a list of people who were connected to these people who built the institution and never got paid. And now they're handing out payments to them to the tune of $2,100 a year to compensate their forebears and to compensate them now in these days for the contributions, as they would likely describe them, the contributions of their ancestors. Now, it's very interesting because we've tackled the subject before about this question of reparations. How is it supposed to work? Because it's not just at the seminary. It's all over the United States. You think of any so-called venerable institution, and you will run smack into the same problem. The people who built these structures, in some cases even designed them, including at Thomas Jefferson's great presidential compound, were enslaved. And you don't compensate slaves, you own them. And you own their work, you own their creativity, you own their energy, you own everything that they bring to the issue of enslavement forever. And then after they die off, it transfers to their children. They're not slaves, they're laborers. They are people working for a wage. And that was absolutely not the case. You're African, you're a slave. We conquered you, we own you. And we own every asset you have, we own, including your children. And after they die off, we own any progeny that they may have produced. We also own them. And this is at the root of the transformation of America that people like to talk about, as if America was the creation of European mindsets, European values, European design. The Native Americans who were slaughtered and worked literally to death, their lands confiscated, anything of value that they owned confiscated, never ever reimbursed, never thought of being paid for. No. So now, all of a sudden, we're getting these kinds of stories, and I want you to pay attention to it. It's not accidental. The stories are intimating that several generations, hundreds of years after the initial assault and crime, and the ongoing crime this was, there are good white people in this world trying to do the right thing, trying to make good, trying to make up for the unfairness, trying to compensate people a whole $2,100 a year, and doing it very quietly, because you don't want every, they are so modest, these people. They don't want to be known. They don't want it known that they're doing these good things out of their hearts, and it's an act of contrition. It is what they see as being necessary. They're good Christian people. And the quieter this is kept, the less trouble there will be. Because, you know, if it's talked about, then the plantation next door will start, you will see some reverberations there. So let's keep this quiet. The main thing is we're doing the right thing. We're trying to do the right thing. We apologize for the fact that this matter was, how would they say, it was overlooked. It was overlooked. And they now have an obligation to face it squarely because they've got some steel in their backbone. They've gotten a whole new understanding of the role they must play to right wrongs committed by their forebears. This is not them, understand. This is about the generations before them, hundreds of years ago, that were so unjust, were so wrong. And certainly we can make the sincere effort to compensate. $2,100 a year in today's money is what we will try and give every family that we can document as being linked to those who worked for no pay and under the worst kinds of conditions. So we're getting these stories. And it's all meant to illustrate that, yes, okay, we're not denying slavery. We're not denying that hundreds and thousands of people, by virtue of their skin color alone, were forced into slavery for their entire lives, and their children as well, and their children's children. And we, after all, are good Christian people. That's what's important to understand. We see the error of our forebears' ways. They weren't as committed to the word of God as they ought to have been. And we see a certain injustice in this, and we want to correct it. $2,100 a year will do the trick. Now, why are these stories appearing? Stories like this. We have all these make good, make up stories of white people who represented the very embodiment of evil at one point in this society, killing off Native Americans, taking their land, killing their children, taking their livestock, all kinds of horrors, you know what they are. And at this point, we are seeing an attempt at compensation. And they would call this, and this is the reason I think they're not calling it, you know, that they they're involved in reparations. They don't want to use that word. No, 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 no. They are trying to make good. They're trying to save their souls. They're trying to do the right thing that is so long overdue. $2,100 a year in 2021 to the descendants of people treated this poorly. So I thought I would ask you, what is this about? Why now? And why are we not hearing from the offended community that they continue to be offended? That they do not recognize this day late, dollar short mentality on the part of people who were cruel to their forebears. Why is it that we are not hearing from the African American community what we ought to be hearing? I mean, $2,100 a year shuts you up? Is that what it is? Your forebears and their lives that were lost to slavery? You agree to say nothing about it? This is a quid pro quo in your eyes? Well, at least they paid something, or they are prepared to pay something. Your children and grandchildren can't even go to the schools built by your forebears. You can't live near these establishments, because the area is, you know, it's a very good neighborhood. You can't live there. So I'm wondering, A, why are these stories surfacing now, these kinds of stories of people trying to make amends for the sins of their great-great-grandfathers and mothers? The way they're doing it, and the fact that there is no collective hue and cry from the Black community about it. It's all quiet. Because somebody is getting $2,100 a month from the benefits of slavery to their forebears. And then related to that, as you can tell, I had a pretty miserable weekend. And I figured, well, what the heck? I can't go through this by myself. I have to share. It's been 100 years since that nefarious attack on the predominantly Black city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Scores dead in this attack. 35 city blocks were burned to the ground, houses burned to the ground. Scores and scores of people dead, Black people. And what we're hearing about Tulsa, again, is redemption. Yes, these ugly things happened, but they're doing their best to redeem themselves, as if that has anything to do with what ought to be done, what ought to be felt, how people ought to react. You mean people have to wait 100 years to get some kind of formulaic response of, oh, yes, we admit this was a bad thing to do. I'm not interested in saving anybody's soul. That's your problem. I'm interested in accountability. And I'm interested in why it is enough, or it appears to be enough, to the Black community to feel comforted by these outward signs, these acts of contrition, which mean nothing. I'm curious about that. I'm curious as to why there isn't on the books, the law books, what happened to all these Black people. And it was considered, it was called Black Wall Street, this area. People were so prosperous in a community they created and maintained themselves. And that really offended many whites, these uppity Negroes had to be put in their place. And the thing that isn't talked about is that Tulsa, the vengeful racist attack on Tulsa, claiming all these lives and property and everything precious to people as they set about to build their lives. Tulsa was not the only city in the United States that saw this kind of retribution by whites. Why? Why is it that Black people are so reluctant to document what happened in their lives? What white supremacy and white racism set out to accomplish, which was to decimate their lives and their towns and everything they owned. Why don't we have a national declaration of these human rights abuses? This is not about, oh, show up at the office next Tuesday. I'll give you $100 on the account that we have here to pay you $2,100 a year. I'll give you $100 if you show up next week. This is not the way to go. And I'm speaking in an admonition to Blacks especially. This is not something, and we have fallen into this pattern of just saying on the anniversary, this is what happened. We're not interested in the anniversary. It happened, and it has to be documented, and somebody's got to pay. Somebody, some government structure has got to pay. Explain how it is that an entire community can be targeted and even aerial bombing conducted. And it wasn't 100 years ago alone. We had the wretched example in Philadelphia of a Black mayor firebombing a Black neighborhood, killing people, the MOVE people in particular. And it seems to be the pattern that on the anniversary day or date of these horrible events, people just drag it out of the closet and they talk in, you know, they're sufficiently moved to tears sometimes. They talk about how terrible it was. And then the very next day, life goes on. So it means you don't understand how serious it is. This isn't a major event in the collective lives of Blacks in this country. You want it to go away too. You don't want to engage in the sustained fight to establish the true record of what happened. And who is accountable and what must be paid? I'm not just talking about cash. Where is the land that the Blacks used to own? Where is their farmland? Where are the schools that they built? The hospitals that they attempted to build? The assets that they were constructing for the community, what happened to that? That's gone. We have Blacks today, this is after 100 years, as I referred to in the case of Virginia. Blacks were about constructing viable communities, totally destroyed. But today, we have the narrative that they're very poor, they don't have any money, and in any event, they don't even have the interest. They don't want to do these things. And we know from history that's not the case at all. But there's reason to keep propagating these myths. So I want to ask the Black community a question. Why are you laying down on the job? You think it's finished? You think there's nothing else to do or that you can do? You think it is okay, you forgive those who trespassed against you and took all the promise held in your community that was built by poor Black people, putting their pennies here, putting their pennies toward that, so that today you could say, well, that was then, this is now. You have no concern, you have no further interest in justice for your community. Somebody else has to come along and do that. I am going to say it on the record, it is reprehensible that that seems to be too often the attitude that Blacks have about their own communities and about their own history and about their duty to fix this. They have an ongoing duty, it seems to me, to obtain justice. I'm not interested in whether some people are offended or some people think, you know, well, that was then, this is now, let's move ahead. No, we have to address the wrongs that were done. And justice means also securing proper compensation, proper recompense. And it's not just cash. What is the proper compensation for a doctor, 100 years ago in Tulsa, Oklahoma, whose offices were burned to the ground, who had no money to rebuild, and who was given every indication that if he did rebuild, it will happen again, because the cops are there to see that it happens again. What is a proper recompense for that? Or people whose farmland was confiscated. Today they can't even feed themselves off of their own land. What is the proper compensation for that? And this is the time we need a national effort launched to quantify, to identify these kinds of actions that were ongoing throughout the United States for hundreds of years. What is the cumulative loss to the Black community and to Black people in general? What has been the impact? I don't want to hear about, well, we're going to give you $2,100 a year, but you got to keep it quiet. We don't want this out there. Why should I keep it quiet? My grandfather or great-grandfather paid with his life and the only reason he did that was because he felt at the time it was the only way he could adequately provide for his family. The indignities that he had to suffer, the unfairness he had to suffer. So this weekend, I was pretty angry. I'm sick of Black people extending this unnecessary and unwarranted pardon to people who have done wrong. The whole system is doing it, even Joe Biden. Even Barack Obama. So there's some way to put this all right, which would involve a national movement that documents what happened, that lays blame where blame ought to be laid, and that demands proper compensation and justice. Some people should have gone to jail. They didn't. Some people should have had a trade made where their possessions were taken from them. That didn't happen. So I'll stop here for the moment. Just these two examples over the weekend really had me quite upset. Because a quick view, overview of where we are in this country and around the world is suggesting we have adjusted quite well to this long-standing oppression. And even for a token gesture, we are willing to forget. We are willing to forget. We'll take this break and then come back to your questions right after this at 888-874-4888. We'll come right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Lead Stories at 888-874-4888. I've been talking about how wretched I felt all weekend. And of course, you're free to say, well, simply because you're feeling bad, you're taking your turn to make us feel bad. No, it's not about that. It's about rising to the business of accountability. We all have failed in one way or the other. And are we committed to doing something in the name of those who paid the heavy price back in those days? All right, so we start with Bruce from New York. You're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you doing today?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Eutrice, you know, I mean, my math narrative to you for a number of years now is about the collapse of empire. I think we have to understand what's happening here within that context. I believe that Biden sees that that there are hard limits to how far this country can go. Yeah. And he sees our experience in this country as a soft spot, you know, a spot that people can point at. It's something that is not hidden anymore since the days of Trump, right, where we had an open racist in the White House, and 75 million people still vote for him after 5 years of knowing that he was a racist, yeah? So he feels as though the empire is threatened by this particular weakness, yeah? And he doesn't intend to do anything more along the lines that you're demanding. He doesn't intend to, to have a real accounting of this thing. He believes, like slaves, you know, that he can give these pious things, these little handouts here or there, these little glorious speeches and that type of thing. And that'll be enough to appease or to pull us in line and to stand behind empire and allow things to go on the way they have been. Yeah. So your righteous indignation about these matters, that's how I feel all the time. When I came to you with my, 3-4 years ago, my diagnosis that this empire is collapsing. I mean, I think all this that you're saying today is playing into that narrative. And that's my master narrative. Yeah? And that's how I feel. And the way you feel is the way I feel all the time. Or the way you felt this weekend is how I felt when I told you what I told you, and how I feel all the time. That's how I analyze and see how things work in this country.
What has to happen to, I don't want to use the phrase wake people up, but what has to happen to begin to get people to recognize that they've been asleep all these years?
You just said not going to happen. Look, I mean, nobody takes us seriously, right? The world will have to come to an end before some of this happens. I mean, this present dispensation, there's nothing about the structures I see around me that would lead me to the conclusion that there's going to come a point in time where this thing could be taken seriously either by ourselves or by the system. Look, in the Caribbean, we have a man at University of West Indies called Hilary Beckles, yeah? Who is walking around the world, you know, raising money off people who were enslaved, you know, to further his own university situation. And I'm not sure that University of West Indies is a useful institution for black people anyhow, right? So this kind of thing happens all the time, not only among ordinary people, yeah, but, I mean, the elites play a central role in keeping almost a modern-day slave system, you know, in place, you know, and nothing, I believe, not even the end or threat of the end of the world coming, right, would make any difference. You know, and if I can say that, I don't know what else has to be done other than, you know, to realize what the reality is, it's never going to happen. Never going to happen. So Biden will go to Tulsa today, and he will give another speech and this feel-good moment, and black people will feel as though, yeah, that's enough for us, you know, and we move on, you know. And you hear us talking the same type of rhetoric about inclusiveness. I don't know. I've never known a slave master who wants to have any inclusive relationship with slaves. And that's the mindset that...
We had one in the White House, and he had an inclusive relationship that produced 6 black children right there in his house, and constructed the bedroom for the assignations directly under the bedroom where he and his wife slept.
But you have to separate two things. I mean, you know, because, you're talking about a president who had, you know, African-American mistresses and stuff, but they were never central to anything. I mean, they were never central to his real life. That was something like, you know, that other white people accepted as like a deviation from how things were supposed to be, right? But those women and their children were never seen as, they were seen in the same way how people forget that we were murdered and slaughtered in this country, all over the country, not just in Tulsa, all over. This happened all over, right? They will forget that these people were connected to him by blood. I mean, it doesn't count. It's not as valuable as if they were his true kin.
You raise many good points. Nobody could dispute that, that's for sure. Thanks so much for getting us started today, Bruce. Reggie from Brooklyn, you're on the air. What are your thoughts?
Pleasure, Utrice. This is actually my first time hearing you in this format on this station. But in the 90s, I used to listen to Talkback every day. And, I mean, I just spilled my coffee here listening to you discussing this issue. The thing is that, first of all, like myself, I have not heard about the church or the religious college in Virginia actually doing the disguised skimpy reparations on the side, and $2,100 a year is like it's like no money. But the thing is that we have gotten used to, you know, as black people, I work as a professional musician and like on the jazz side, and I see, you know, the same thing, you know, black innovators getting paid next to nothing, or maybe after they die, you know, getting a renegotiation of something and getting a little hush payment, you know, although the record company owns the masters, you know. We're kind of, at this point, used to it. And actually, with the Tulsa situation, I remember in the 90s, you, Hugh Hamilton, covered this issue. There were actually some activists that were in New York that they had some kind of a case down in Oklahoma, and you know, I figured then that yeah, looks like they're going to get the reparations, the estates are going to get everything, and I'm just so surprised that that didn't happen back in the 90s. So it's like you know, I don't really what the last caller said, pretty much I agree with it. But the first thing is for that our general media to actually document these cases and put it in a you know, in a context where it's available to the mainstream audience, because a lot of times we, you know, the reparations story that you detailed at the beginning of the broadcast, I wasn't even aware of that, you know? So it's you know, it's just the way that, you know, the way that the histories are written, the way that the stuff is documented, and the fact that as Afro-Americans, we're so used to getting nothing that if we get next to nothing in a solid payment, you know, in a solid cash payment, I hate to say this, but you'd be surprised how many people would settle for that. I see it in the music industry all the time. So I'm sorry to say that, and it's really great to hear you do your. It's really great to hear this show. It's my first time in like more than 10 years, and you actually made me spill coffee on myself listening to. Really, I just spilled Black Folgers coffee at the beginning, you know, listening to this. So it's wonderful that you're back. It's always great to hear your analysis. I also used to read the City Sun. I mean, fantastic paper. I used all of that stuff in the 80s and the 90s and all that stuff. So it's just wonderful to actually hear you on the radio. But, you know, this is my first time in a while. So, but, yeah, as black as Afro-Americans, we are used to getting nothing. So if someone gives us a guarantee,
but you know, we have to break the habit. We have to stop it. Somehow it has to be stopped. Because while we are doing nothing, or while we are accepting whatever it is that is given, we have so much more to think about, and we are supposed to be accountable to our forebears. We're supposed to be accountable for what we this is our turn to take the helm, and we're not doing a good job at all. We really have to answer for that. Thank you so much for calling in today. I appreciate it.
Greatly. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hey.
It was so interesting, your speech, and very moving to me. There was a little piece I think I missed. I got the amount of the money, and maybe I got it wrong. Is it the government's giving the money out, or is it a private church?
It's a private university, a theological seminary.
Okay. So their idea is to give back to how many families?
We don't know.
Okay. All right. So I guess when I heard you speak, I couldn't help of thinking the previous show before you came on, and reparations, because there's, you know, there's different kinds of reparations, as you have said. And I heard a parent talking on Gary Knowles' show in an interview about one of these very ritzy private Upper East Side schools that I don't live too far from, and how really upset he was that they've taken a lot of classic books, five classic books to be exact, out of their curriculum, and they've replaced them with some other books that are, it sounds like the intention is to bring awareness to white children about the privilege they have, the privilege of being white, how many lives were taken to make that happen. And, you know, apparently some of the kids are going home and they're feeling like guilty, or saying, are we guilty of something? And it's like, you know, well, yeah, everyone who enjoys the spoils of the beautiful things that were built on the backs of the free laborers of this country, otherwise known as the slaves, we all have a debt to pay. We all owe something, and we all need to be conscientious of it. It doesn't mean that you today are a bad person, but it does mean that we all have to try to right this wrong. And so I was a little perplexed listening to this guy, because I have to tell you, my husband who died has had an enormous collection of all kinds of literature about the history of slavery and blacks in America. And you can pretty much guess. I mean, he could have been Revolution Bookstore, except for now it's in storage. It's a gigantic collection of books. And I was thinking, you know, wow, it would be really great if I could take those books over and just like make their give this to their library. So, because these are really, really, well, they're painful books to read, to be honest with you. They're very hard to read, but very necessary to read. And it also almost seemed that this parent was really disturbed that we were going to have to introduce his children to the other history of this country. And literally that's what he was talking about, the other history, which has been suppressed and not shown. But I really think that we are better as a country that we start letting the rest of our history be shown. Teach children how to, you know, what this country was about. You know, we have some great things, but we have this terrible, terrible scar that is not resolved. It is not resolved in this country. The scar of slavery is not fixed. It's not sewn. There's maybe a little Band-Aid on it, but we're not going to get ahead unless we face it straight on. And we try to do something like reparations for everybody, because it is the fair and right thing to do. And I also want to say that I think there is a lot of cynicism, which is what keeps many people away from the topic, because they feel they've been screwed for so long that, you know, and they've also been fighting for so long. So many people have been fighting for so long, not just black people, white people too. And it's just the same thing. But I have to give credit where credit's due. I do see some changes coming about, and unexpected to me. Who would have thought? Well, I told you I thought maybe because Biden was his last term, maybe he would try to do a lot of things that could make him be, you know, go out as a pretty good, good-looking leader. And I think that he is listening to a lot of people on the left. At least his ears are open. And I think that, you know, I knew about the Tulsa story, but I only know the story because I listened to WBAI in the 1990s. That is it. I never heard it anywhere in mainstream media at all, ever. And all of a sudden, it's the rage. Everybody's talking about it. There is a museum in Soho, and there's all this attention being given to it. But Jesus Christ, it only took them how many years to put it out in the mainstream media? I mean, I've been listening to BAI since 1987. So that's the only source of information I ever got about this. I don't even think my parents knew about it. So they're in their 90s. So it's been a carefully hidden story by the media, and now it's coming out. And that's a good thing that's coming out. But I would agree with you that $2,100 is paltry, especially since the entire country was just given $2,000. Every single person in this country was given $2,000. And I would actually say that the heavy lift of giving out the reparations, the responsibility belongs to the government. And that we are the people, we are the government, and we should have to pay to try to make this wrong right in many different ways. And I think one of them is education. I think it's
well,
very, very vital.
Have to leave
and
it
necessary.
There. I'm so sorry, Gwen, because we've run out of time. But
I thank
there's
you for,
good news.
For your story.
There's good news. The good news is that we are continuing this discussion tomorrow and then the next day, if it is possible for us to do. We need to talk about this. This is a very serious subject for all kinds of reasons. So I thank those of you who were able to educate us today, and I'm looking forward to more people joining the conversation tomorrow so that we say what we have to say, we express what we need to express, and we get out of this habit, because this is now fully entrenched, that we are anniversary people. You know, on the anniversary of this or the anniversary of that, we say a few words and then we move on. No, this is something quite different. And let's continue the discussion tomorrow. Thank you so much, those of you who called in and contributed today. Bye-bye.